and welcome to the 12th episode of And Your Brain Turns to Mush, a TV podcast. Today we're going to be talking about NBC's renewals, the potential of a Scream TV show on MTV, Two and a Half Men being renewed but without a cast member. We're going to do spotlights on Rectify and the latest episode of Game of Thrones. So yeah, I think that's what we're going to do today. I'm Graham.
I'm Josh.
And I'm Rick.
And you should like us on Facebook. You should follow us on Twitter at BrainMushCast. You can send us an email at yourbrainmush@yahoo.com. You can find some of my reviews at popzilla.net. And yeah, I think that's about it. Oh, and you can download the Stitcher app. Almost forgot that.
Listen to us on the go.
Yeah, anywhere. We need to get way more enthusiastic about plugging that one. Like, get really into it. Come up with whole little skits and commercials. No, let's not do that. So, a bunch of shows got renewed by NBC, including Parenthood, Grimm, Revolution, and Chicago Fire.
Let's see if you can guess how many of those shows Josh watches.
Zero.
A zero.
Hey, welcome to the crew, brother.
I watch three of those shows. I like one of them.
Why do you do that to yourself, man?
Work related.
Oh, got it.
It is NBC. Yeah, I really like Parenthood. I'm a little bit behind on it, but it's a really, really good show.
I knew it.
I'm glad.
I knew it.
Hey, there's no Parenthood's a good
I
show,
knew it was
man.
Parenthood.
Yeah, dude.
What is? I know this is probably the dumbest question ever asked, but what is Parenthood about?
Parenthood is about this family, and they all there's a lot of different. They're all it's an adult family, so it's kind of large, and there's different lots of different siblings, and they all just live.
So they all just live. Is that what you said?
Yeah, they all just live.
They all just live. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, fair enough. You know, it's a family drama.
Sounds incredibly boring, but that's probably just the way you're explaining it.
Probably. I don't know. Like, if you liked Friday Night Lights, I would check it out, but I don't think you've seen that either.
I have not, no.
But yeah, it's really good. It's not as good as Friday Night Lights, though, which is, like, amazing. But it's a very solid show. I like it. Very well written. So, yeah, I'm glad. Grimm is a show that is a genre show that I was really excited about when it first premiered and has done nothing but disappoint me and bore me. Parenthood can do an episode about, you know, basically just people going about their daily lives, and it's 20 times more exciting than the episode of Grimm where they fight a fire demon, because those characters are so bland. So bland. It's really sad.
I can't abide in shallow characters. That's too bad.
Revolution, a little bit better than Grimm, but is also pretty whatever. It's
pretty meh.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. It usually has one or two moments every episode that make me go like, okay, yeah, that was pretty interesting, but overall, I feel like they just don't really know where they're going with this, and I'm not sure that I care. So yeah, hey. That's our enthusiastic response to these renewals.
Starting this show off on a chipper note, aren't we?
Oh, and also, Law and Order SVU got renewed for like its 70 millionth season.
Yes.
So any SVU fans out there, don't worry. It's not getting cut down before its time. It'll be around for another decade at least.
Any SVU fans out there, get the hell off my podcast.
Hey, man. So people, it's okay if you like SVU. There's some people who do, right? I mean, it gets decent ratings for NBC. There has to be some people who like it.
A few, at least, right? At least a couple.
Yeah. And Chicago Fire, which is from Dick Wolf, who was the guy behind the Law & Order franchise. It's about firefighters who break up and fight fires and also do other stuff.
Oh, wow, that sounds really exciting.
It is really exciting.
Can you tell me that again?
One time this woman was, like, stuck under a car, and that was really exciting, I guess.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, wow. It was crazy.
Oh,
we're being really douchey about these shows, because they're mostly just very bland, other than Parenthood, which I like. It's a very good show. I'm glad everyone gets to keep their jobs, at the very least, I guess. And I'm glad that Parenthood lives to see another day.
Any word of Hannibal, though?
Yeah, that's the thing. Hannibal not getting good ratings, but its ratings did go up from week one to week two. It also created a little bit of buzz last week, which could be seen as good or positive when the prima donna, ultra-conservative Salt Lake City affiliate of NBC has refused to air it, which is like, I don't know. It always seems to do the opposite of what they intend, because every single time they did this with The New Normal and I think Playboy Club back when that was on.
What the hell?
What?
Like Playboy Club? Like the Playboy Club?
Yeah, it was this really...
What the hell is wrong with them?
It was a terrible show, Playboy Club was, but, and it was, Ricky, it was on network TV, so don't get too excited. But, yeah, like, both of those, they went out of their way to make a big thing of, like, oh, we're not gonna air these, and all it did was get press for these shows that desperately needed it. Didn't really work for Playboy Club, but still. I mean, it's like two people in Salt Lake City. And more people than, you know, live here, but still, it doesn't really affect anything. Hopefully Hannibal will live to see another day, but... Because the thing is that they really don't have anything else so far. Maybe if there's something in the development cycle that they really like, they'll plug that in, cancel Hannibal, but I don't know. I am at least mildly confident that Hannibal will get a renewal. I really hope so. It's probably the best drama on network TV right now.
Yeah, I remember you two coming back and saying that you liked it a lot. I still haven't seen it yet, so I can't say anything to its defense, but I'd hate to see it get canceled before I even had the chance to watch it.
Well, it's like what I said before when we talked about it. How long can it fucking go?
I think you already know the ending pretty much. I don't think so. I think that it can kind of play by its own rules. It doesn't have to do things the way that the movies did.
Right.
And also, it's the best thing to come out of Hannibal Lecter, that whole franchise, since Silence of the Lambs, like, easily. Hannibal the movie was not very good. Hannibal Rising was definitely not very good. The books after Silence of the Lambs kind of got a little bit into self-parody as well. So, yeah, I really like Hannibal. I really like what they've done with the franchise, and I just hope a Brian Fuller show gets to make it another season. This last episode, like, I liked the show, but this last episode really pushed me into loving the show. It was very good. So, yeah, renew Hannibal, NBC. Or the Brain Mush audience will come down around you.
And they will come down hard. And you will rue the day
that you ever crossed us, so I'm sure. So there's so many of them out there. You never know who they are.
Oh, yes. They work in the shadows, you see. You won't know they're there until they strike.
Is that a nice thing to say about our audience, that they're shadow operators?
It's cool.
Yeah.
Makes them sound badass.
It does. That's true. So, yeah, moving on from that, how familiar are you guys with the Scream movie franchise?
Yeah, I'm pretty familiar. I mean, I like the first Scream, but the rest of them, it's like, okay, it's all the same.
Yeah. And what about you, Josh?
Don't even ask me this question, because each and every episode, I'm losing my legitimacy on being on this podcast at all, because I haven't seen one Scream movie.
Scream is not exactly, like, the height of cinematic, you know, experiences. Okay. Anyway, so...
Cool, so I got off, okay.
Yeah, I love the first Scream. I like the sequels. You know, Ricky is right. They don't need to exist. But there is some, they're funny. There's some good moments in them. Some, decently scary moments as well. I don't know. I like Scream 4. I'll just say that. I thought it was a really fun little twist on the genre.
I laughed my ass off watching that one. I couldn't take it seriously at all.
Well, I don't think you were really supposed to. It was like Cabin in the Woods. It was a horror comedy, but it kind of edged more into comedy than horror, the fourth one especially. Well, three and four. But Scream 4 was good, but then Cabin in the Woods came along and kind of did everything that movie was trying to do, like, a million times better.
Couldn't agree more.
I have seen Cabin in the Woods.
So there you go.
Booyah.
I would still recommend seeing the first Scream. The other ones are very, very optional.
How old is the first Scream now?
95, I believe.
Oh my gosh, that's ancient times.
No, it's 1995.
I don't watch anything
Josh,
that wasn't made in 2002 onward. I'm sorry.
You were worried about losing your legitimacy with our listeners. This is what we're talking about right here. You don't watch anything pre 1995. That's not good.
Dude, reality days, television man. Wasn't strong back then. Like, that's why TV sucks. Now we're in the golden age because of stuff like reality television.
Yes. Oh yeah, exactly. Scream is good.
And the Josh meter drops further, further, further. It's sarcasm. It's sarcasm. I like this one.
Scream is good. I like Scream. But MTV is talking about making a Scream TV series, which.
So, I mean, is it incredibly popular to merit a TV series?
It was in 1995.
So they're a little bit late on this.
Yeah, they're super late on this. The Scream 4 underperformed, like, really badly at the box office. It was basically a flop, which made me sad, because it was, you know, I enjoyed it for what it was. Especially when it came out. But yeah, so... This is so weird to me, you guys. Like, I don't understand why this is happening. I don't understand what MTV is thinking, but I don't understand what MTV is thinking, like, 90% of the time, so. But this is, like, this as a series does not lend itself to a TV show at all. Like, the movie series, it makes no sense as a TV show, so, like... The trademark of Scream, the thing that makes Scream different from all the other slasher franchises, is that it's very self-aware about slasher movies and its cliches, and the characters are constantly talking about horror movies and the cliches in horror movies and, like, you know, how to avoid them. So, if every single week are you gonna have, like, a bunch of kids talking about slasher movies, like... Won't that get a little old? How much is there to say about slasher movies? Probably not three seasons worth, I'm guessing. And also, maybe they could just avoid that and it just becomes more of a straight-up horror show. In which case, that kind of isn't Scream at all. It's just a guy in a Scream, you know, the Ghostface costume running around killing people with a knife. I don't understand... where they think this is going to go at all. It feels like an awful, awful idea for a TV show.
It's not going to go that far.
Maybe our brains just can't comprehend it. Like they know what they're doing and we can't keep up. It's going to turn out to be this incredible thing and we're going to look like fools. They're going to point at us and laugh at this episode because we said it's going to be awful.
But this is MTV. Like, when was the last, like, MTV revived Beavis and Butthead, and that was a pretty good decision. They've had some good episodes. But other than that, like, when was the last time, we're young people, supposedly, right? So when was the last time you watched the channel of young people, MTV, regularly?
Oh, God, I can't even remember the last time I watched MTV, if I ever have, I don't think... I've ever gone out of my way. It's always somebody else watching it. I just happen to be in the same room.
I just...
Yeah, if it's not Beavis and Butthead, I don't get into it.
I just, I don't see what they're aiming for here. Like, I don't know why they're doing this. This isn't popular with, like, you know, young people, as Scream 4's box office receipts show. Just let sleeping dogs lie, man, or, you know, some other metaphor that would fit better, because seriously, there's nothing here. So, boo on you, MTV. I think this is going to be a bad move. But a lot of people said that about Hannibal, and I was just talking about how great that was. But still, I don't trust... Unless they get someone like Brian Fuller-esque person behind the scenes. Like, if they get some Jane Espenson to run the Scream TV show, then I would have some hope. But I seriously doubt that'll happen. So yeah, not looking forward to that.
Pulling the bullshit chain.
Yeah, that sums it up pretty well.
There you go.
So moving on to Two and a Half Men, going from one depressing news story to the next. It has been renewed. There will be a season 11 of Two and a Half Men. Ricky, I'm going to have to edit out some of these farting noises because that's just immature.
Yeah, our demographic is going to 12-year-olds.
Yes, seriously.
11-year-olds. It's slowly dropping.
I despise that show.
Yeah, it is not good.
I don't like it with Ashton Kutcher in it.
Did you like it with Charlie Sheen in it?
It was all right with Charlie Sheen. I watched a few here and there, but not with Ashton Kutcher. I don't even give it a chance.
I have hated the show with both. Very, like, it's... Everything about this show annoys me. It is lazy writing. It is just characters being dicks to each other for 22 minutes without any, like... It's not like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where you get the idea that the creators of the show are in on it. They know that all the characters are giant dicks. It's not like that, because it's like the show always kind of sided with Charlie Sheen's character. And he was just such a horrible, horrible person. It was hard to watch. Like, nothing about it was funny. It was just very, very lazy dick jokes for 10 seasons. Ugh. It is now TV's number 2 comedy. It used to be number 1 for the longest time, but it has fallen behind Big Bang Theory, which both those shows are made by the same guy, Chuck Lorre, who has never made a show that I enjoyed. But the big twist in this news story is that Two and a Half Men is coming back, but without its half man.
So is the show just going to be called
Two Men?
Two Men.
It'll be going up against the new normal for...
Yeah, there you go. Get ready, man. Focus on the family. They're on the way to the report.
Yes.
Two Men.
Yes, all of the freak out groups will be like, Two Men! Oh, no!
That show could only be about one thing.
But yeah, so it's coming back without the kid, Angus something. And I'm sorry, listeners, we're very ill prepared for the Two and a Half Men segment. The reason behind that probably being, if you remember earlier, I think it was last year, beginning of this year, the kid that played Jake said that Two and a Half Men was a filthy show. He got very religious and started bad-mouthing the show. And, it seemed like everyone had kind of made their peace with him, but apparently him or the executive producer of the show did not want him around anymore.
He pissed off the dragon.
Yeah.
You don't piss off the dragon.
Yeah, I would not want to get on Chuck Lorre's bad side if, like, what, he's been working there since he was, like, what, 9, 10? Like, he's kind of giving you all of your money, so
sure, you don't bite the hand that feeds you, no matter who you are, like.
And, yeah, he did, so he's off the show now. I don't know. So, John Cryer, who plays, Charlie Sheen's brother's character, who I do not remember the name of, he seems to be the smartest guy of the original three cast, because this is just a money train, and, both Charlie Sheen and the kid have just decided to piss on the money train. Why would you piss on the money train? John Cryer is the only one of the original cast of the original three still on the show. So I think that's pretty funny. I don't know who's going to be sticking around at this point, because the show is whatever attracted to people to the show in the first place, which mystifies me. Is not there anymore. So it would be not surprising to me at all if the ratings continued to slide like they did this past season. So yeah, you guys have any thoughts on Two and a Half Men?
Nope.
Not at all.
Cool.
I would not waste my time, not waste my breath with it.
So, let's get into our episode spotlights of today. And the first one is Rectify. Sundance Channel's new show, and has just been renewed for a season 2 today, right before we started this podcast. So yeah, that's pretty cool. How many episodes of this show have you guys seen?
Josh has been a very, very bad boy this week, because he did not watch a single episode of Rectify. Oh, please don't be mad at Josh. Please don't be mad at him. He doesn't know better. Yeah, I just got too busy. I'm sorry, but I look forward to asking you guys some questions about it. If Ricky watched it, did you watch it?
Yes, I have.
How many episodes?
I have watched half of the first one, because I just turned it off. I did not
Holy
like it.
Holy cow. Oh, wow, this is going to be entertaining then.
This is going to be fun. Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Fight! Fight! Fight!
I watched the whole season, all six episodes.
Uh-oh.
And so, yeah. Wow. Okay. I loved this season of Rectified. I had a little bit of problems with its finale. I feel like its finale was not very finale-like, and I was afraid that was going to be it for the show, but hearing that it's going to come back for another season, I'm a little anxious about that now, and I can just say that, yes, I love this show. I loved... The acting was fantastic. The writing was really, really great. The... just the cinematography, the soundtrack, just everything about it really, really worked for me. For those who don't know, Rectify is a show about a man who 19 years ago was sentenced to die for the rape and murder of his girlfriend, and now some DNA evidence has come out disputing the fact that he was the killer, so he's been released and is going back to his living with his family again for the first time in 19 years. So yeah, that's the premise of the show, and it's a lesser show, a more commercial, and probably more a show that is a lot more marketable would focus on who actually did his girlfriend's rape and murder. This show doesn't. This is an intensely personal story following him and his family, how they react and how they adjust to him being back home. And it was just, it was really moving. It was just so well acted. I can't emphasize like how great the acting from Aiden Young, who played the lead in this, was, and his sister, the woman who played his sister, who has appeared on Mad Men, the comedy web series Burning Love. Just, yeah, it's just really fantastic all around. I really, really liked this show. It was great. So, Ricky, what was your problems with this show?
It just bored me, man. It just, the first, if that's what you a pilot, I guess that'd be called, it just didn't draw my attention at all. It didn't have anything that caught my attention and said, okay, I want to continue with this story. I care about this guy. I don't care. It's just, I didn't like it. Just bored me.
So was that true? Was the first episode, Graham, slow
no,
to start?
No, the first episode was great. The second episode was better, but the first episode was great. I was engaged since minute one. You don't see... this was on the Sundance channel, and it reminded me a lot of independent movies that you would see at Sundance. You don't see shows like this on TV very much. It is very contemplative. It was very... I understand what Ricky was saying, because it can be... it's very slow in terms of plot, because that's not what it's about. It's about how this family reacts to him being back into their life, and how he reacts to this huge, huge change around him. Rectify is so unique in TV because it's just, I don't know, there's something about it that I've never really seen on TV before. It takes its time. It doesn't go for big shocks. It doesn't go for easy buzzworthy stuff like nudity, and you know, it's just a show about a man dealing with his past. And yeah, it was incredibly well acted, really, really well written, and just yeah, it was. I really liked this show. There are moments in the show, especially the last two episodes, where I felt like it got a little bit, I don't want to say pretentious, but I'm going to refer to a criticism I heard of Community season 2, which I from Maureen. Ryan, which I always disagreed with, but I think kind of applies here. She said that Community is thinks itself so clever that there's not really room for her in there. It's like there's the characters and it the show being extremely clever, but it's almost too self-satisfied for her to enjoy it. I disagreed with that. But I kind of felt that way about the last episode of Rectify. That would probably be the one I had the most problems with. But overall, the show was just, it was very smart, was really moving, and again, the cinematography was just beautiful. So yeah, I really, really liked this show.
So you were caught with the main character right away. Like, you liked him. Was he a likable lead?
No, he's not a likable lead. He's a total weirdo, because the show is not it's not like he's like this, you know, charming rogue who comes back into town. It's the complete opposite of that.
Okay, because that's what I was picturing.
No, he is a very, very, very troubled individual. I'm going to try not to go into spoilers, but... you understand as the show goes on why he is the way he is. He's very quiet. He's almost alien-like in how he, like, fails to, he can't really talk to people normally. And that is because all this horrible stuff to him that's happened to him, you know, while he's been in prison. He went in at such a young age that he hasn't really had time to adjust to adulthood. And he just has a lot of mental problems. You see a lot of really, really messed up stuff that happened to him while he was on death row. And so he is so ill-adjusted and trying to cope with being out in the real world again, a place that he thought he would never see, that he just is having a really hard time dealing with that. And I loved following that, and it was really, really great.
So is it heartfelt in that way? Like, you feel for the character?
Yeah, definitely. There's tons of great little details too. Like, this is this isn't really a spoiler. It's, you know, very, very minor. But when he comes back home, he's looking around his little stepbrother's room, which used to be his room. He picks up the PlayStation 3 controller and doesn't really know what any of it means. And he feels very threatened, and he goes up to the attic and unpacks his Sega Genesis. And for just a whole day, he just bars himself in his room playing Sonic the Hedgehog and, you know, dressing like it was the early 90s. And it was just like, I don't know, there's a lot of attention to detail on what it would actually be like. And there's also a lot of like discussion of spirituality, which I thought was really very interesting, because it's not something that's talked about on TV that much. And just to see him deal with his faith and where it stood in relation to his family's faith, having been through this experience, was like extremely interesting. But yeah, I just really liked the show.
Definitely, if anything, it sounds different. And I guess that's what it was to you. Was it a kind of a breath of fresh
air?
Yeah,
for sure. I'm not saying I want every show on TV to be extremely contemplative and very slow paced. But for this show, it worked very, very well. Just that, because the acting was there, the cinematography was there. And it was just, it felt like a show that had a lot of confidence in what it was doing, and I really respected it for that. It was, yeah, I really liked the show.
There you have it.
Like I said, though, it didn't really stick the landing, so that would probably be my biggest problem with it.
Well, for some people, it didn't stick the takeoff either.
Well, it's a show that is always going to have a very limited audience because of how different it is. But I was with it in minute one, the first two episodes back to back, I watched it like that as it was originally aired, were just so good. Like, I don't want to give anything away, but there's the scene on the golf course with his, I don't want to give anything away, you guys, but it's fantastic.
All right, so I guess it's grade time then.
Well, Ricky can't grade something he watched half an episode of.
Well,
I give it a D.
That's crazy. Ricky, you need to go into a little bit of why you stopped the show, like, past, you know.
Yeah, besides the fact that it was boring, like, why was it boring, I guess?
It didn't really captivate my attention. For some reason, this guy it's just a whole different formula, you know? It's one of those type of shows. It works, like Graham says, it works for some, but it doesn't work for others. And it just so happens to be one of those shows that I don't get into.
But Rick, you didn't even give it a whole episode, man. A whole, just, you know, 40 minutes.
I didn't even want to give it 40 minutes. I just turned it off halfway. I was just like, I'm done.
That's so crazy to me. I do not understand this at all. I don't understand.
I don't know.
Well, but different strokes for different folks.
I would have stuck around for the cinematography and soundtrack, if nothing else. But thankfully, it had great acting and writing to go along with that. I would give this show a B+, because I was a little disappointed by its finale, but overall I thought the show was really good, and I'm really looking forward to the second season. I'm really glad it's getting the second season too, because there's some real lack of closure, both like emotionally where the character's at and you know, the overall mystery, which there is like some plot threads into that, even if it's not the main, it's not the engine of the show, is not finding out who killed his girlfriend, but there is some plot threads that relate to that, and I, you know, want to see those move forward. So yeah, B+. I enjoyed this a ton, and I will be watching again on season 2. And the whole show is available. All 6 seasons are available to buy on iTunes or Amazon Video for anyone who wants to check it out. I really recommend it.
You read my mind. That was my next question.
Yep.
All right. So I guess that wraps that up.
Yep. So, Game of Thrones.
So, what'd you guys think?
I turned it off halfway through. D.
Just didn't captivate you, you know. Just not your thing. Totally understandable.
Yep.
Yeah. It was a good episode. I really liked it. I really liked Jaime Lannister in this one. For some reason, just that whole Kingslayer thing comes together and you begin to learn that Jaime Lannister isn't such a bad guy, aside from pushing Bran out the window
and killing his cousin.
All that. And killing his cousin and such. But
anything can happen when two cousins when two people share a cell, cuz.
What you trying to say to me?
Really strained Arrested Development references.
Hey, I'm sure they appreciate that.
Can we take a minute out of Game of Thrones for just a second to say that Arrested Development is coming back this month? This month?
Oh my gosh. Did you ever think those words would come out of your mouth, man?
No, not...
Game of Thrones. I mean, Arrested Development.
This month. Not even a movie, just a whole other season of the show. Really, really, really... Man, I'm so excited for that. But anyway, yes, I agree with Ricky completely that this was Jaime Lannister's best episode and definitely the Emmy submission episode for Nicolaj Coster-Waldau or whatever his name is.
A.K.A. Prince Charming. That's what he looks like.
But yeah, that was a fantastic scene. When they're doing a great job of making Jaime sympathetic and explaining, like, I never thought that him killing the Mad King was that horrible. I know that he swore a vow, but I mean, the dude had the title the Mad King, so
exactly. And we live in the 21st century, so it's kind of hard to relate about honor and vows, and people break their promises all the time.
Have zero honor, so what's the big deal?
I don't see what the problem is here.
So that scene was just fantastic, and I'm pretty much in Jamie's corner about killing the Mad King. That makes sense to me.
A bit. And I loved how that whole thing harkened back to season one, because he was asked by, you know, King Robert, what did he say to you when you shoved his sword into your back, into his back? And he said, burn them all. And that came up again, which was very cool. You guys get the feeling that we're going to definitely end up liking Jaime more and more as this show goes on.
Yeah, they're gonna pull a Spike from Buffy with him. It definitely looks that way.
Yes, indeed. That's my guess, for sure.
This episode was filled with just tons of weird supernatural stuff for a Game of Thrones episode. Starting with Game of Thrones version of Kenny, the leader of the Brotherhood Without Banners.
Oh my god, they killed... what's his name? Bran?
Bran? No, that's not his name, is it?
No, not Bran. Bran is... It starts with a B, though, I think.
I thought.
So. We have such a hard time with these names.
Continue, and I will look it up.
Anyway, that was an interesting scene. We're seeing this Lord of Light. I don't know who all these other old gods are and stuff like
Beric
that.
Beric is his name.
But this Lord of... Yes. Beric? Yeah, okay. This Lord of Light guy, man, he's got the power. He'd be the one I'd be worshipping, right? I mean, bringing a guy back to life, that was... I didn't see it coming.
Yeah. I mean, we knew that the Lord of Light, or at least whoever, like, I always kind of thought, I don't trust Miss Landry, you know, Stannis' Red Priestess very much. So when she was saying Lord of Light, and then she, you know, birthed the vagina monster, I kind of figured that it was some evil dark magic and didn't really have anything to do with actual gods.
I saw it as, like, witchcraft, and this Lord of Light thing was just something she was using to control Stannis. I didn't think it was an actual... But it must be a real thing, you know?
I'm still not sold that it's a force for good.
No.
Maybe
no,
in true Game of Thrones fashion, it can be used for good or evil and is very ambiguous.
Perhaps. It's really freaking me out, this Lord of Light thing, because that guy said he was brought back 6 times by the Lord of Light. And I think, really, I'm really centered that it's all about the interpretation of it. These guys, the Brotherhood, without banners, they may be a whole different interpretation from the Priestess. I'm, like, really sticking to that, that this Lord of Light could be a good thing, but also a bad thing.
Yeah, maybe... Maybe it just comes down to how it's used. Maybe it's just, like, a force more than an actual, like, entity that, you know, can think its own thoughts and all that good stuff. I don't know. I'm really desperate to know more, though.
Maybe it's just a, you know, a side effect of... Because we know that Westeros, there hasn't been magic seen in the world for a while, but it's starting to make a comeback. And so, really, the Lord of Light is just this magical ability to be able to do stuff like this. And, you know, they're rationalizing it with, you know, a godly entity.
Yeah, it's very possible. That's a good theory. But yeah, Arya was very upset that they let the Hound live, but they did.
Oh, man. Okay, I knew Arya was a bit vicious. But, wow, that girl, she's seen some things now, and she was willing to run up and slit the Hound's throat. That was crazy. And yelling things like, burn in hell. I was like, what? This little girl saying that.
Hey, he killed her friend, so perfectly justified
the
that.
The butcher.
Yep.
The butcher's boy, yeah.
I was pretty surprised when I seen that, too, because I thought the Hound was going to die. Because that was, like, a crazy fight. I'm like, this is the end. This is the end for the Hound.
And
but no.
They used his kryptonite fire in the battle.
I know, and I thought for sure, this guy is done. That's his greatest fear in this world, is fire. And here he is fighting this flaming sword. The moment that sword caught on fire, it was so funny to see his face. Yes, I mean, that's the worst
yes,
nightmare.
Yes, it was very much a Indiana Jones, like, snakes, why did it have to be snakes moment?
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
But
yeah, all in all, great scene, great fight too, the way it was choreographed, you know, his shield was on fire and stuff like that. And I did not see it ending that way, where the guy goes to block and he cuts straight through the sword and into his shoulder.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I also did not see that guy coming back from the dead, because When he died, I was like, oh, wow, that character was really built up and turned out to be super lame.
Yeah.
Yep, not at all. So we'll see what goes on there. So the next step those guys are taking is to ransom off Arya to the Starks.
Yes.
That's what left them.
Yeah, and they said that, you know, they know that there's not much honor in it, but they need the gold, so they're going to do what they got to do. And then the revelation that Gendry, Arya's, you know, Robert Baratheon's bastard and Arya's friend, is staying with them.
Yeah, what did you think about that scene? Did it pull at your heartstrings a little
bit? Yeah, what I was wondering is, do you think that they were trying to build some kind of weird romantic tension between Gendry and Arya?
Oh, wow. If they were trying to do that, it was totally and utterly lost on me. I saw them as kind of a brother-sister type of bond.
Yeah, I mean, I can see how you thought that, too. And you're probably right, but I kind of thought there was the undercurrents that she... Obviously, he's a lot older than her, and I don't think he thinks of it like this at all. But I think that she kind of has a little thing for him.
Oh, little girl crush, little Arya.
Well, maybe at that point, you know, you could be... What would she say? Something like about family... You'd be family.
You could be our family.
That part, it's like, okay, well, you know, that could be taken two ways. You know, like what Graham's saying, the relationship thing, or brother-sister type relationship.
Or you could just pull a Jaime and Cersei and have it both ways.
Oh. Yeah.
The Game of Thrones
That made
way.
Me kind
of
sad, though, because I don't want to see Arya lose all of her friends again.
They're falling one by one. First we lost hot pie to the bakery. Tragic, tragic scene.
Yes.
And now Gendry's a blacksmith. I mean, come on, they're falling like flies. This is Saving Private Ryan all over again.
It's exactly like that. Hot pie is Vin Diesel.
Exactly. Except with an epic note, it was a loaf of bread.
Yeah, and so that's terrible. I'm trying to transition here.
I love how that was your natural.
Yeah, that
transition.
Was my natural.
the longest so in human history.
That was a seamless pause for the audience. There's no way the audience knows that we had to pause it there. No way.
Okay, Stewie, whatever you say. So,
Stannis' daughter, it was revealed tonight, there was that scene where he finally went up and saw his wife and his daughter. I thought it was definitely made Stannis like 10 times more interesting than he was in the past. You had kind of felt bad for his wife because you figured she was some poor, you know, aging woman who was kind of ill. But then you saw that she's kind of a huge freak, and it kind of makes sense that Stannis doesn't, you know, want to go hang out with his family all the time. I mean, not his daughter. That's, you know, his daughter's very sweet.
I mean, anyone that keeps their, like, babies in a jar is kind of cuckoo.
Yeah, they're miscarried fetuses. That was...
Yeah.
That freaked me the hell out.
Yeah, that was very, very sad and very, very creepy.
Sad and creepy, yes. But yeah.
Stannis should, like... That should be his, like, when he runs for king of Westeros, that should be his slogan, sad and creepy.
Sad and creepy. It's not... Yeah, the Baratheon, it's not ours is the fury. It's sad and creepy. That's what it is. Yeah, but... wow, what a twisted up little relationship he has. Both with his wife and his daughter. I mean,
yeah,
weird.
And you
weird. They're like prisoners, really, is
what
they are.
Especially his daughter.
Especially
the
daughter.
I get the feeling that the wife could go out and do stuff if she wanted to, but she would rather sit in there and talk to her pickled jars of fetus.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so you saw a little bit more of the, like, the sexism that's inherent in the world of Westeros, and that she gave him a daughter, but all that was valued is, you know, giving him a son to be his heir, and you know, nothing ever came of that. But she places a lot more importance on those jars than her actual daughter.
Yes, that's a very good point, and which makes me feel even more sorry for the girl than I already
did.
Yeah,
so we meet her, and she's a very sweet girl, very kind, one of the, you know, lots of childlike innocence, and she seemed very smart too, but she has a horrible facial scar that I don't know if it's... I'm assuming it's from birth, not from, you know, magic or something.
Stannis stops by to visit her daughter, and you think Stannis, okay, at least he's a good guy, he told his wife, who said, don't even visit her. That you have no need for distractions. And he was like, no, this is my daughter. Okay, respect meter for Stannis. Ticked up just one little point. And then he goes in, basically says, oh, your friend the Onion Knight? Yeah, you could never see him again,
yeah.
Traitor. And walks out.
Like, clearly one of her only friends. One of the only people who would come and visit her in this cell, basically. Her room is basically a prison. And, yeah, that was just really sad. And, yeah, we see Stannis' daughter is going to kind of attempt to deliver books to Stannis. To Davos. And then it turns out that he can't read, which was also sad. And she wanted to teach him to read. And I don't know. That stuff didn't seem hugely consequential to the episode beyond... showing us a little bit more about who Stannis is, because he hasn't been, like, the most interesting character so far, and he's basically just been a douche. And he continues to just be a douche, but you kind of see, you know, what's behind the douchey veil.
Yeah, and I think his family should have their own show because they're very interesting as far as
his own reality, their own reality show.
Yeah, I could see it. Yeah, the Baratheons, yeah.
And they're just, they always bring the jars around the dinner table.
Oh, gross!
You got some mayonnaise in your brother Jeff's jar.
Oh, that's disgusting. Anyway, do you think this is going anywhere, or was it just that? Was it just, you know? Or wait, maybe this little girl's going to help the Onion Knight break out. That'd be cool, because I really don't want the Onion Knight to die.
What I hope happens is that the Onion Knight, you know, gets his shit together, kind of, again, we're going back to dissing honor, sheds his honor a little bit, decides that, you know, Stannis is a dick and I'm not going to sit around in a prison cell and obey him and do whatever he wants, and breaks out of there and takes Stannis' daughter with him.
Okay, yeah, I could totally see that happening. I mean, he has a history as a smuggler. He knows some tricks. That is entirely possible.
That is my hope for that character. And then her and Arya can be friends and they can rule the world together with Daenerys, and now this is just getting extremely fan fiction-y. But yeah.
Yeah.
I hope that we see more of Stannis' daughter, because she's a good character, and I feel like, especially, I'm not sure how long, like, how much time takes these books take place over, but I would definitely like to see what becomes of her as they get older, you know?
Oh, yeah. If they are ever able to actually break out of the bonds of their overbearing lords. Yeah. Okay, so we mentioned Daenerys. Do you want to travel across the Narrow Sea to check on them? See what they were up to this episode?
Yeah, Daenerys didn't have much to do in this episode. I liked Grey Worm's speech to her about, you know, that his real name was the name that he got captured with and was put into slavery with. And Grey Worm, even though it's a horrible name and was just made to humiliate him, you know, was the name that he was freed with, so he will keep it. They actually gave us a face, you know, they gave us a face of the Unsullied, someone who, you know, the Unsullied actually have a representative now to give them a little bit of personality.
Yeah, so we're going to see this relationship evolve as they're marching out. So that was good. Yeah, not much else except for we had some two old men talking about who's more loyal.
Yeah.
You know, I'm more loyal. No, I am. I'm her favorite. No, I am.
I don't think this is going to go well for Jorah. I think that the other guy is just bad news, and that Jorah should push him off a cliff at some point and be like, oh, one of your dragons did it, or something.
Yes. Yes. I could
burn
see
his
happening.
Tent in the middle of the night and just be like, oh, do you think what he baby says, dragons, so do unpredictable.
Do you think what he said to him was actually legitimate, though, that it would hurt, you know, Daenerys' claim to the throne just because she is advising him, or he is advising her? Like, I think that's loadable. I mean, come on. If she's going to conquer this place, she's going to conquer it. It's not going to matter if, you know, Jorn's along for the ride.
Yeah, also, again, I believe there was a speech in season one where someone says that, you know, the peasants don't care who's in charge. They care that it rains in time for their crops. They care that, you know, the taxes aren't too bad, stuff like that. And
they don't care of the games the High Kings play.
I feel like if Daenerys is a good ruler, that little detail of Mormont being her advisor will be quickly forgotten. Like, people won't really care that much.
Yeah, so we do definitely foresee this conflict, though. These advisors trying to fight for Daenerys' affections. And, time will only tell where that goes. I don't know. I think Daenerys is the one that she holds loyalty pretty high, and I can't see her tossing aside
Jorah. I can see her tossing aside that other guy, though, because he seems a bit shady.
He does. I mean, he showed up with a, you know, wearing a hood, so And if a hood isn't shady, I don't know what is. But yeah, not much else went on. That was pretty much it.
Yeah. Another thing, Rob was having some big problems this episode. Big problems.
Yes. We're kind of seeing where the Northmen, their whole situation has just been all downhill, deteriorating for like a season and a half now.
Yes, and our opinion of the Stark Bannermen continues to plummet as they kill kids this episode. They rape a woman in, a couple episodes ago. Now they're killing kids in this episode. So that's the Stark Bannermen for you.
I really like when we had the Lannisters in the first season calling the Northmen savages and stuff like that. I was like, oh, they're just different from you. You're going to call them savages. No, they're kind of savages. But then again, kind of everyone in Westeros is a savage in their own way.
Yeah, I'm sure Lannister men would do the, as we saw when Arya was captured, are just as bad. They just have shinier armor.
Sure, sure. Better clothes.
But yeah, so we saw Rob had to... Do you think he made the right decision in executing, you know, basically one of the heads of his Bannermen families?
Absolutely not. I think Rob at this point is just so pissed off. Think about how often he's been betrayed now. He's probably questioning his own leadership at this point because he had Theon Greyjoy, who he called brother,
right.
You know, considered him his brother, stabs him in the back. And then we have, you know, the Karstark, which is supposed to be one of his most loyal men, you know, the Starks go way back. And his mother, yeah. Yeah, so there you go. I mean, I think that was him letting out all that anger and frustration because you could tell he was pissed, but I think it goes beyond that.
Now, if you ask me, I'm starting to see, like, this downfall of Robb Stark, and now this is what I'm just kind of predicting ahead here. But I think we're going to see the fall of Robb Stark either later this season or next season. It has to come because, you know, this is crumbling for him. It's going to rise up again, but it's just going to crumble and something's going to happen. He's going to die. Somebody's going to die.
And his next move is going back and talking to, you know, Walder Frey, the guy who he broke his oath to.
I don't see how that could end good.
I think that is going to go extremely poorly and might, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if something crazy happened and we're nearing the end of Robb Stark as a character, like Ricky said.
Yep, as Tywin said, the wolf's days are numbered.
Yeah, definitely. But I'm gonna play devil's advocate here. And say that, you know, maybe Robb Stark made the right decision because, again, he is the king of the North. You can't have one of your, basically your generals, say it, you know, blatantly calling you a child to your face and treating you like a moron, treating you with no respect. Other people are going to see that, and that's, he can't just let that fly, you know?
Sure,
yeah, it's a respect
what's...
type of thing.
What's more important, you know, his image, his self-image, or whether or not they can win this war? This is a life and death thing.
But his image is tied to if they can win the war because he needs his men to follow him to win the war.
Well, obviously not. He lost half. You know what it means to lose half of your army?
Yes. Yeah, that's... They gave him a third option besides killing him and letting him go, of holding him hostage. That probably would have been a happy medium there.
I would have heeded the word of my advisors at that point, but nope, we didn't see that.
Yeah, man. Robb Stark, he seems so smart at moments and seems such an idiot at other moments.
Well, what I think he is I think he's basically a case of Robert Baratheon. He's an expert tactician, a good military strategist. I mean, he comes up with good plans. And, you know, even at the end there, we see he's going to try something else. I think he's smart there, maybe on the battlefield, but he's making all the wrong decisions as a king. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, he married that girl, which totally, if he wouldn't have done that, think how much better things would be just at this moment where he's going over to Walder Frey asking him for for help and assistance.
I also think he should have made Tatlin stay at River Run, because they'd seen her around, knowing that she betrayed basically their entire cause by letting Jaime go. I can't imagine is too great for morale.
No, I gotta figure the morale can't be that great in the camp to begin with, you know, especially when the guy called them, you know, the king who lost the north. Like, that struck me, you know, because what we got from Rom's men up to this point was, like, just an amazing amount of loyalty and, you know, chanting, king in the north, king in the north,
and
all that.
And a little bit of rape. A little bit of rape.
And a little bit of rape here and there, you know, but that's... it's Game of Thrones.
But yeah, so I'm thinking Daenerys has a lot more momentum at this point.
Oh yes, I'd be placing my bets on her. She's got she's got it going on.
Extremely loyal army.
More ways than...
It's kind of funny because she needs this army to be loyal to her, but she's also encouraging their freedom. But at some point, maybe it'll get to the point where she's like, "Well, I want you guys to be free, but not that free."
Well, I feel like she's always walked the line very well. You know, the people that have followed her, I haven't seen much betrayal ever, I'm trying to think.
Yeah, I mean, those people in Karth were not her people, so.
Yeah, so, there you go.
And I think we can all forget that whole storyline happened now. We'll just put that behind us. Because Karth was not Daenerys at her best.
No.
This episode I thought was really, really... last episode was a lot more visceral. It had that amazing ending. This episode I thought worked a little bit better emotionally. Just because you had, Jaime's amazing speech, basically tons of stuff going on with the Lannisters this week.
Tons.
Tywin is, he seems to take the strategy of tough love and parenting to the extreme.
A bit. Yeah. So another great scene. Whenever I see those three together, like Tywin, Cersei, and Tyrion, you know you're in for some crazy stuff, you know? Some good battle of the wits going on, as well as, you know, they're always sitting across from the table from each other, Cersei and Tyrion, and it's funny to see them go at it. And Cersei, I just want to smack her face with her stupid looks she gives Tyrion. Because the moment Tywin said, there was a big piece of news today, right? So Tywin is trying to counter this thing. He knows what's going on, right? He knows the game well, and what's going on is that Sansa is she's the key to the North right now, and so she's this piece of property in his eyes that has to be dealt with. And so he matched her with Tyrion, which that came out of nowhere
but
for
it,
me.
Yeah,
I don't know if you guys saw that coming.
It makes perfect sense from where Tywin
sits.
It
absolutely does.
But it was like, yes. You know, just because of how astronomically different the characters was, you know, of Sansa and Tyrion, and also because even though we know how, you know, these marriages work, we still tend to think of marriage as, you know, like marriage. So that was just like, whoa, really came out of nowhere. I was also shocked.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, there's Cersei giving her smirk, and then to see it wiped off her face the moment Tywin turned to her and say, oh, and you? Yeah. You're marrying the guy that doesn't like women.
The guy that's in the closet, yeah. Actually, and this is a testament to Lena Headey's good acting, I actually felt kind of bad for her because she sounded so childlike when she said,
yes,
please don't make me do this again, because this is basically her exact same situation with Robert, where she felt nothing towards Robert at all, and she's again is being sold off like a horse.
Exactly.
I mean, Cersei's a horrible person, and I'm not really gonna feel bad for Cersei, but just that one line, it really cut to
oh,
past
definitely.
All of her bitterness, just to who she probably was as, like, you know, a 13-year-old girl.
It's classic Game of Thrones, and it's what makes that drama so epic. And I've said it before, it's definitely a merit to their writing and to their acting, because the combination of the two, when she delivered that line, it takes you from not liking that character to just even it for a moment, seeing, like, the situation through her eyes and being like, wow, that sucks. That really sucks.
I freaking love it. It's great irony. I was snickering at that part. When she did that, I didn't feel bad for her at all. I'm like, finally.
I could definitely see how you could see it that way, because, you know, I wasn't like, oh no, poor Cersei, either.
Not at all. Not at all.
But yeah, so do you think this marriage between Tyrion and Sansa will actually happen?
Will it actually come to fruition?
Yes.
I hate the only reason... Why do you say yes, Ricky?
Why do I say yes?
Because Tywin is Tywin?
It makes perfect sense. And Tywin made the call. It has to happen. And chances are it's going to happen. Because it makes sense.
If Tywin was smart, he would, you know, get on this shit fast and get this done.
Oh, yeah. That's probably going to be very soon.
And, yeah, I'm never one to underestimate Tywin. And he's a guy... that, as I think Tyrion has said, he gets what he wants.
Yeah. You know?
But I'm still not going to count out the Tyrells, particularly the older Tyrell woman, the one that calls all the shots.
Alina.
I'm facing on her. Alina, yes. Because I think she's going to surprise us. She knows the game well, too, and I don't think she's going to so easily let Tywin tighten his grip so quickly, not only securing the North, but also securing her own house under his wing, too. I think he'll see a fight from her.
Yeah, she definitely owned Tyrion in their little conversation. He was not expecting sure. her to be, keeping it so real. And, yeah, it was funny because... She probably could have gotten away with not paying for half of it because Tyrion was so flabbergasted. But she made the offer anyway. I thought that was a really good scene. And
dude, she might as well have dropped the mic. Like, the way she walked out of there was great. And you could tell, man, Tyrion had a respect for her, too. Give me those figs.
And, it's funny. You were thinking of this isn't going to happen because the Tyrells won't let it happen. I was thinking maybe it wouldn't happen because Tyrion... has had everything, like his title, stripped away from him, been given the shitty job, been told by his father that, you know, that he can't, you know, sleep with whoever he wants to, that, you know, saying that, threatening to kill Shay, if Tywin ever found out that they were still sleeping together. And I thought maybe this is just, like, Tyrion's breaking point. Where he, you know, kind of goes against his family in a very, very out-and-out way, in a way that we haven't seen him do before.
Could you ever imagine a world where Tyrion and Cersei actually team up and they realize, wow, our father he's kind of a vicious cunt, and the only way we're going to take him is together? I don't know.
No,
I couldn't see that happening because what would Cersei even have to bring to the table anyway? I mean...
Cersei is not that smart.
No.
Yeah. But yeah, I just kind of hope that Tyrion... Actually, you know, maybe I'm lying, because I kind of do want to see what a marriage between Sansa and Tyrion would look like, to be honest with you.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Probably real distant.
I'm sure, but it would just be an interesting dynamic. And Sansa... being married to Tyrion is not the worst thing in the world that could happen to Sansa. It's not best case scenario, and it's really bad, especially politically, for her family. But hey, at least he's not gonna beat her. So points
there's
for Sansa.
That. Hey, in Westeros, if you can find a man that won't beat you, you're doing okay.
Yeah.
Definitely, though, and it would prove her some awkward situations, and particularly too for Sansa, who from the beginning and still to this day, she's very, I think, materialistic, and she wants such an ideal life. I mean, when she's looking at the Knight of Flowers or whatever, I don't know his name, the Tyrell boy. She's always, oh, he's cute, he's a good fighter. Oh, she still has this fantasy in her head.
Yes, of the prince and the noble knight.
Sure, the noble knight that will sweep her off her feet and they'll live happily ever after. And to have her set up with Tyrion.
The complete opposite of what she wants, yeah.
Exactly.
But hey, Tyrion is cooler than that Tyrell kid, so maybe she should just shut up.
Yeah. I don't think she would have found that much happiness with the Tyrell.
Yeah, she would have been in for quite the surprise. And still maybe.
As Tyrion said, she's lacking all his favorite parts.
Yeah, that was a good line. Man, him and Jaime both just making digs at the Tyrell men's, sexuality. Jaime had that great line a couple weeks ago about the throne of cocks.
I'll tell you what, those are Lannister boys. They have a quick wit.
But yeah, I kind of hope that Tywin... I mean, I don't want Tywin's plans to work out because Tywin is a bastard, but I kind of want to see what comes of his plans. And if they come to fruition, it'll be very, very interesting to see, at the very least.
I mean, he's holding the cards. It's in his favor. His nephew's the king. His grandson. It seems like he's going to get what he wants. But we'll see. What else? Oh, the North. The North North.
Oh, yeah. Did stuff,
Jon Snow.
Did stuff happen
Ricky,
in the North?
Ricky, I'm sure you got stuff to say about that.
What?
Your favorite character getting what he... What we know he wanted from the moment he met her.
He's getting some action.
Yeah.
What's going on.
And some he apparently action. Invented female oral sex.
Yes!
Which...
It has been invented.
Which, dude, I'm just saying, she's been dressed in the same clothes for months, and they live up north, and I cannot imagine that the smell... You know, we'll just leave that aside. But...
that's salty.
But, you know what? I didn't care about that. I'm just gonna say, I don't care about Jon Snow. That was fine, but it was something that you inevitably knew would happen, and then happened. So it was like, well, okay then. Moving on.
Well, do you think that Jon Snow is gonna stick with the Wild now, or is he gonna go with the Night's Watch type of deal? Is he gonna just turn around and go back to
Night's
Watch?
Well, is there really a Night's Watch to go back to?
Well, he doesn't know that. That's the thing.
So where is Jon Snow at this moment? What is he thinking in his head? Is he in his head?
He's thinking, she's pretty hot. shouldn't have told them there was 1,000 guys because they're going to kill me now.
Yeah, see, that's the whole point. There may not be 1,000 guys.
We've never seen anywhere near 1,000 guys in the wall. That's a crazy high number. There's like, 30 guys or something. Maybe 60 at the most.
Yeah, I don't know what his plan is. That's the whole point. Is he going to be a wildling, or is he still siding with the Night's Watch?
Yeah.
He's supposed to be like a secret agent man here for the Night's Watch. But like you said... There's going to be no Night's Watch left. I think they've pretty much fallen.
Yeah. Leaving the North utterly undefended. So get on that, Joffrey. I'm sure he's going to get on that as quick as possible.
Oh, yeah. A responsible young man like him. Yeah. But I don't know. I got to kick out the line. You still got your clothes on? You know nothing, Jon Snow. that was pretty funny.
Yeah, and if there's one truth about Jon Snow is that he knows nothing, or at least appears to know nothing. Jon Snow very often comes across as the dumbest character in the show, I feel like.
You never know. He may just rise up. He's playing dumb right now, but he may just rise up because he is the bastard son, and he will hit the freaking spotlight, and he will rule.
Well, I feel like other than the time where he tried to escape in season one, Jon Snow doesn't take action. Jon Snow reacts to things. And that's it.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like a guy with a plan.
He's always just kind of like, well, I'm captured by these dudes now, but she's kind of hot, so, you know, whatever, could be worse.
You think he's just going with the flow.
Stuff just happens to him, and he's so lucky to be alive. Like, really, because, yeah, he is not Tywin. He is not a man with a plan. He's not even Rob, who has shown to have, like, a great tactical mind. He's just, like, you know, he's like Forrest Gump. He's just like experiencing stuff. Just happens to be there.
And yet, he is Ricky's favorite character.
I'm gonna kill you. But it's
anti-rectify, pro Hemlock Grove, pro Jon Snow. Me and Ricky are just
that. That's right, man. That is right. So, you're gonna see some serious freaking character development from Jon Snow. Well, you're gonna see him develop from a boy. What you're saying, Forrest Gump?
It's
into
been
a
long
man.
Time coming. I'll say that. It's been 3 seasons now.
It's very slow character development.
I give Jon Snow a little too much crap, perhaps, because he's usually the most boring part of any Game of Thrones episode he's in. But, I don't know, his storyline in this, while predictable, like, I'm interested in seeing where it's going. So you guys, this episode means that we're halfway done with this season of Game of Thrones.
Oh, wow, the halfway point.
I'm gonna cry.
How do you think season 3 compares to season 1 and season 2 at this point in each of these seasons' runs, 5 episodes in?
I gotta say, Game of Thrones for me has always just been consistently epic throughout, that it's hard to compare season to season. I would really have to take some time to get back to you on that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm probably with Josh on that one, but, you know, I have to say, I'm really liking this third season. It really, like, what was it, the previous episode really started it for me. I think I like it a lot more than the second and the first.
Yeah, for me, it's clearly a cut above the first season, which had so much world building to do that nothing really got done for a very long time in that season. But the second was such a great season that it's hard to compare. Hard to pick a clear winner. But sure. Yeah, they're pretty neck and neck for me. Both seasons have been really great. But the second season ended great. Hopefully the third season will as well.
Yeah, I'm hoping the same thing.
So yeah, I think that's about it for this week. Tune in next week where we're going to talk about Game of Thrones. And we're going to talk about Rectify a ton more just to bug Ricky. No, we're not.
man.
And probably some other stuff. So yeah, have a good one. And these things, they just snap right off.
Oh, man.